Tomatoes that won't rot, drop resistant grain.
You could do it by adding or deleting DNA. The species that you use don't even have to be the same. It's transgenic, people panic when they hear the fish genes are added to strawberries to help them not to freeze.
But can GMOs help with the crisis mounting? It's a challenge to feed 7 billion and counting. Droughts and food prices are causing world hunger. Sure. So what's the big deal if we make the crop stronger?
But with GMOs, you can patent the breeds and sue the farmers if they replant the seeds. The idea's to help developing nations, but who benefits? Communities and corporations.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michelle Simon, who's a public health lawyer specializing in legal strategies to counter corporate tactics. She is president of Eat Drink Politics, a corporate watchdog consulting firm, and is the author of Appetite for Profit, How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back. Her latest article at Food Safety News and the Huffington Post is Monsanto Teams Up with Congress to Shred the Constitution. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michelle Simon.
Thanks for having me.
And tell us how Monsanto has shredded the Constitution, Monsanto being a giant food manufacturing and processing organization famous for genetically modified seeds that propagates around the world. And I guess it's also famous for its litigious muscle. But what happened on Congress, and why did the president sign this bill that is being derisively called the Monsanto Protection Act?
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened was, you know, we had a ridiculous emergency situation where Congress had to pass the budget bill, which was called the Continuing Resolution, and the president had to sign it by the deadline or the government was going to shut down. So in that kind of crisis moment, no good corporate lobbyist lets that go to waste. And that's what happened with the biotech industry. Attached to the continuing resolution, what was called the biotech rider. And what this provision does is basically allow for an end run around the court system. So what's been happening is various public interest groups have been challenging our U.S. Department of Agriculture approval of the planting of these novel GMO crops by the likes of Monsanto. And in some cases, courts have found that the USDA has essentially not done a proper review and found that the approval of these crops have been done illegally. Well, obviously, Monsanto doesn't like that. So this new provision requires USDA to essentially ignore the court's ruling that the agency's approval was done illegally. So that's why I called it shredding the Constitution, because we have a pretty basic concept in our democracy, which is that we have three branches of government, right? We have Congress, which makes the law, the executive branch carries out the law, and the judicial branch interprets the law. So, you know, where the judicial branch has said the executive branch hasn't done its job, it's an important check and balance on our governmental system. But because the lobbyists of the biotech industry didn't like that, they basically got their friends in Congress to say, that's okay, you know, USDA, you can just go ahead and ignore that court decision, and because we want to go ahead and plant our crops anyway.
Well, the person involved, or at least the point person in the Senate, a chair of the Agriculture Committee, is considered something of a liberal, is she not? Senator Barbara Mikulski.
Right. Actually, Senator Barbara Mikulski is head of the Appropriations Committee, which is the committee through which this budget bill sailed through. Now, it's true that her excuse for letting this go through was that this provision had reared its ugly head back last year when the House Appropriations Bill was making its way through that body, and also it came up during the Farm Bill debate. So this is a provision that's been around, and it just kind of got reattached to the continuing resolution, and Mikulski says, oh, it wasn't her fault. You know, she didn't want to have this happen, but of course she was under all kinds of pressure to get to ram this piece of legislation through, again, because Congress is, you know, in such a broken state of affairs that everything is done in this kind of emergency basis. And like I said, lobbyists, you know, are fully equipped to take advantage of this kind of crisis situation.
So basically, she just basically said, I just got buffaloed at the last minute. I mean, she had to know what was in the bill. It doesn't sound, not a convincing excuse.
No, it's not very convincing. I mean, but she felt the pressure. I mean, you know, over 300,000 people signed a petition brought by an organization called Food Democracy Now, based in Iowa, that was so outraged about this, they got their members to call the senator's office and the White House to try and stop this at the last minute, or at least to complain about it when it was too late. And Mikulski's office was so overrun with calls that she put out this very defensive statement saying, oh, you know, it wasn't my fault. Well, you know, look, the buck has to stop somewhere, and she could have shown some more leadership to not let that provision stand. Similarly, the White House could have, if it really wanted to, stopped it. Of course, again, because it was all done at the last minute, it would have been very difficult for the president to bring the government to a screeching halt over this. But he could have, in the alternative, put out a statement saying he didn't agree with this provision and wouldn't let it go through again.
You mean a signing statement?
Signing statement, exactly. Right. And he refused to do that. The only good news is the continuing resolution is only good for another 6 months, and so we'll see if our, you know, elected representatives and president, you know, do the right thing in not letting this type of provision attach to any other bill or, you know, stand alone.
Again, I'm speaking with Michelle Simon, who's a public health lawyer specializing in legal strategies to counter corporate tactics. She is president of Eat, Drink, Politics, a corporate watchdog consulting firm, and the author of Appetite for Profit, How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back. Her latest article at Food Safety News and the Huffington Post is Monsanto Teams Up with Congress to Shred the Constitution. Now, in terms of the other branch, the judiciary, there was, of course, a Supreme Court case very recently, wasn't there, involving Monsanto and GMO seeds, that Monsanto sued a farmer for illegally having these seeds. And apparently they're designed in such a way that they only operate, work one planting only. Is that how it works? And but nature has its ways of altering the best laid plans. And, you know, the wind can blow the pollen and the seeds will sprout up somewhere else. In this case, I believe he was collecting seeds at a granary, and they weren't specifically Monsanto seeds, but they had somehow bled into other seeds. I may not have the details correct here, so I better stop rambling and have you fill us in on what happened there.
Right. Well, that was a whole different situation, and but I believe this is someone who had planted Monsanto seeds and then was on the second life of the seed that Monsanto said, oh, well, you still have our patent for these seeds. So, you know, what the point is, though, that this company is trying to control the whole food supply, right? I mean, it's not just Monsanto. There are other seed companies that are, you know, the name of the game is to patent the seeds, to keep control over them so that a farmer that may want to plant seeds again the next year is subject to this kind of harassment. And so that's why people are so upset. Because what's more important than our seed supply? I mean, that's where all our food comes from. And these companies really want to control our entire food system. And they do it under the guise of, oh, we need this technology to help feed the world and so forth. When, of course, it's complete nonsense. I mean, we have plenty of food to feed the world. We just don't have the political will to spread it around in the most equitable way.
But isn't that the nature of what Monsanto is doing? It's not just monopolizing and arguing that these seeds have magical properties, but you have to keep paying for them as you go. So suffice it to say that Monsanto has a lot of clout, and it seems that its lobbying clout is pretty extraordinary if they were able to slip this bill in at the last minute in this must-pass continuing resolution to keep the government from shutting down. What's your understanding then of the array of lobbyists, and did they essentially catch the grassroots by surprise?
Yeah. Well, like I said, this provision was hanging around some other legislation earlier last year. And so, you know, but then they wait for the right opportunity. I mean, the thing is, these companies and lobbyists and trade groups that represent them are so powerful and have so much money to throw around that they have lobbyists, you know, in Washington, D.C., 24/7. So they just are there when the right opportunity comes along. So it's very hard for the advocacy groups to even, you know, respond when it's often too late. You know, we saw the power of the biotech industry teaming up with the junk food industry come down full force last fall in California, where we had the initiative on the ballot called Prop 37 to label genetically engineered food. I mean, that was an incredible display of lobbying power. $45 million spent by the combined efforts of the biotech, pesticide, and junk food industries to stop a measure that originally was polling 60% in favor. So, you know, it's very difficult to compete with that kind of lobbying power and money to spread your deception around, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, if in terms of heroes and villains, Barbara Mikulski folded and didn't stand up for the American people, it seems that the Montana Senator John Tester, who's actually a farmer, isn't he?
Yes.
He did. He tried to fight Monsanto.
Yes. Well, he did the best he could. I mean, you know, he was also on that committee and, you know, gave a passionate plea and tried to put an amendment in to the bill to try to reverse the biotech rider. But, of course, you know, he was in the minority and just got overrun with the whole steam train that was moving full speed ahead. But he has been a hero on behalf of farmers and the American people, for that matter, against the likes of Monsanto. It's just, obviously, we need more people on his side.
Well, there are, of course, agribusiness has taken over from the family farm. So what is the kind of political landscape there in terms of the power of agribusiness and the idea of organizing the family farm, farmers, I should say?
Well, I think you're pointing to a much larger problem, which is that we have you know, the family farm is fast going by the wayside, and all the data points to small farms, medium-sized farms becoming less and less, increasingly being consolidated or just taken over by larger agribusiness, you know, industries. And so, you know, this idea of the family farmer, this is a very, you know, kind of old-fashioned idea. Of course, it still exists here and there. But the agribusiness industry wants you to think of farming still as a family farm, when in fact most of agriculture in this country has been industrialized. And that means that, you know, the interests are to profit motive and go often to shareholder interests, where there are publicly traded companies, you know, at the helm. And that means that small farmers are getting the short end of the stick, and the American consumer, of course, we're not getting the types of varieties of truly healthy food that we need to thrive. Instead, it's basically whatever is cheap and convenient to, you know, monocrop. I mean, corn production in this country, for example, mostly doesn't even go to corn on the cob. It goes to feed animals, you know, increasing the Americans' meat-centered diet, which we know is not healthful. So there's all kinds of ways that big agribusiness has taken over the methods of production in this country that are bad for the environment, bad for small farmers, bad for, you know, animal cruelty, labor, our health, you name it.
Well, but you mentioned corn and how it's distorted our agriculture, because most of it's to feed animals in order to slaughter them for meat. But what doesn't end up that way seems to end up in high fructose corn syrup, which is the ubiquitous corporate food additive that's in just about everything on the supermarket shelves. And it is the leading, according to a number of very, very prominent medical researchers, it is probably the most direct cause of the obesity epidemic, particularly obesity among children.
Well, it's certainly one factor, and it's controversial as to whether how much of it has to do with high fructose corn syrup per se. There's no question that because of the, as you say, the ubiquitousness of that ingredient and its cheapness, you know, we've got supersized sodas and so forth. But in general, we have an agricultural system that is designed to pump out the cheapest ingredients that go into all kinds of processed food, animal feed, et cetera, and just to keep that engine going. And as opposed to looking at what we could be supporting, I mean, look, we don't even produce enough fruits and vegetables in this country to meet the current federal dietary guidelines for fruit and vegetable intake, right? I mean, right there, that tells you there's something seriously wrong. There's an extreme disconnect between our agricultural policy and what we know about just nutrition, common sense.
Well, just in closing then, Michelle Simon, Food Democracy Now! Apparently is gathering signatures demanding the president do the right thing. And you say this, the good news is this continuing resolution only goes for 6 months. Is that right?
Yes.
So there's another bite of the apple coming up. What should listeners do?
Well, I think they should absolutely get more informed about this and, you know, other issues like it. support groups like Food Democracy Now. Another one that brings lawsuits is Center for Food Safety. You know, really get involved with these types of organizations, get informed, and make sure, you know, when the next opportunity comes up to make your policymakers know, let your policymakers know that you're not happy with a decision that they're making. You know, we have to get involved. There's just no question about that. And that the only way, you know, policymakers listen is when they hear from us. So I think it really behooves all of us to make sure that, you know, we're connected with these groups and to be aware of when these opportunities come up to speak out.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Michelle Simon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Michelle Simon, who's a public health lawyer specializing in legal strategies to counter corporate tactics. She is the president of Eat Drink Politics, a corporate watchdog consulting firm, and the author of Appetite for Profit, How the Food Industry Undermines Our Health and How to Fight Back. Her latest article at Food Safety News and the Huffington Post is Monsanto Teams Up with Congress to Shred the Constitution. And we're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how rivers of Canadian tar sands crude oil are flowing through the streets of Mayflower, Arkansas.